Vedanti tat tat vavidas tat vid yaj gyanam advayam brahmeti paramatmeti bhagavaniti shabjate, where it's explained that the absolute truth is seen in three features. So if you come across verses in Srimad Bhagavatam and you can't quite figure out what to make of them, then just refer them back, first of all, to the Paribhas Sutra 1328, Ete Changsa Kala Pumsa, Krishna Stu Bhagavan Swayam. If that doesn't completely clarify, then next refer to that, it's 1211, Vedanti Tat Tat Vavidas, which is analyzing the absolute truth, analyzing Krishna's, how Krishna manifests himself. And that, in this way, a Paribhas Sutra defines what a book is about and resolves any possible misunderstandings. So in Brahma Samhita, there's a Paribhas Sutra, it's verse 1. And I think we'll probably go over that tomorrow. Now the second section, section B, from verse 7 to verse 21, it's all about the material, the process of the material creation. And it is the second most difficult part of Brahma Samhita, although it's actually considerably less difficult than the first bit. So if you survive the first five verses of Brahma Samhita and you haven't dropped out of the course by then, out of bewilderment or whatever, then you'll be able to handle the rest, the second group of verses. The creation from Mahavishnu through Shambhu. We can just give a little sort of diagrammatical hint, something like this. There's Mahavishnu. There is the material world. There's the material world. There's the glance. I'm not much of an artist, but anyway. That is the glance of Mahavishnu. It's like a special form of Lord Shiva. Not exactly the original, but almost. I mean, sometimes it's not entirely clear how Lord Shiva, what is like the supreme form of Lord Shiva. Sometimes Shambhu is being presented as such. In Chaitanya Charitamrita, Prabhupada talks about Sada Shiva, who's the original form of Lord Shiva, who has a Vaikuntha planet, you know, like beyond Mahavishnu, actually, in Vaikuntha. And then there are various things which happen in terms of the process of creation. So that's described in these verses from verse 7 to verse 21. Then the third section, from verse 22 to 28, is all about Lord Brahma actually appearing after this procedure has happened. Lord Brahma appears on top of the, or from actually, and on top of the lotus flower. All the other living entities are within the stem still, but he is on top in one of the universes that we haven't shown the universes, but there are many, many universes. So in one of the universes, our universe, Gavadakshaya Vishnu is there, Lord Brahma appears, and initially there's some confusion on his part. That's described elaborately in Srimad Bhagavatam. Then he gets some transcendental inspiration. At that point we'll refer also to Srimad Bhagavatam, where there is like a little more step-by-step description. He gets some inspiration to meditate and try to, in this way, come to grips with his situation. And then he gets his first initiation. That is from Saraswati, Transcendental Saraswati. She is one of the consorts of Lord Narayan. There's Saraswati, who's the mundane goddess of learning. But this Saraswati is one of the consorts of Lord Narayan, and she's the, like, transcendental demigoddess of learning, you could say. So that helps Lord Brahma. And then he gets second initiation from someone else. We don't want to get into any controversies, but this is actually what happens. He gets second initiation from Krishna. First initiation, he gets what we would call, what is called sometimes the Gopal Gayatri Mantra. For those of you who are second initiated, that's the second to last of our Gayatri Mantras. That's from Saraswati. Then Krishna initiates him, gives him second initiation, and gives him the Kama Gayatri, which is the last of our Gayatri Mantras. And that really, when Lord Brahma gets that second initiation, when he chants that Kama Gayatri Mantra, oh, that then really everything changes in a very dramatic way. And then Krishna reveals himself. And when Krishna reveals himself, well, Krishna has revealed himself, in fact, to give the Kama Gayatri. But when Lord Brahma chants it, then, you know, his realization deepens. And when his realization deepens, then he speaks the famous Govindam Adi Purusham verses. They're the next section, D. Text 29 to text 55. Those are the Govindam prayers. Lord Brahma, expressing his realization, achieved through chanting that Kama Gayatri Mantra directly under Krishna's instruction. So then when he finishes chanting the Govindam prayers, then he chants, right over on the last page of our overview book, the fifth section is actually just one verse in which Lord Brahma kind of sums up his ecstatic realizations about Goloka Vrindavan and the inhabitants of Goloka Vrindavan. And having expressed his ecstatic feelings and perceptions of Krishna, then Krishna instructs him further. He's already given him the mantra, but then section F, the sixth and last section from text 57 to text 62, Lord Brahma, sort of having come out of his ecstatic state, or out of that trance-like state, then Krishna then instructs him on, it's like he's given him the mantra already, but like the context within which Lord Brahma should chant the mantra, the sadhana. It's not that he just chants the mantra, but he has to live in a certain way. Yeah. He has like a whole program. Krishna basically gives him a program of how he should live, what he should do, what he shouldn't do, in order to realize this and, I mean, complete the realization. Yeah. Complete the realization. Become fully qualified as topmost devotee and perfect his life. And that then brings Brahma Samhita to a conclusion. So that's just a little overview how we're going to be addressing the book. the system that we'll use for discussing Brahma Samhita. I wonder if anyone has any questions or comments so far. Draws out the main points very, very nicely, very cleverly. It's a very nice purport. And then tomorrow we'll discuss it. And we'll also make some reference to Jiva Goswami's commentary, because he also... Actually, Jiva Goswami's commentary on the first verse makes up about at least a quarter of his entire commentary on the entire book. Yeah, something like that. Probably about a quarter. He really goes into it in depth, each of the words. And he brings out some very nice points. Okay. So you'll all read the first verse? Okay. Please do. And as I said, if there are any points that you come across in terms of the English and you'd like us to attempt to clarify, then just note them down and we can try and do that. I mean, it's not, even though the English is difficult, it's not impossible. But we just, you know, well, I went through it with a dictionary. It helped. He's very clever. His use of words is very clever, even though they're kind of obscure. But actually, they really capture what he wants to say very nicely. All right. So we'll see you tomorrow at 3:45, 4:15 tomorrow. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So, here is our attendance sheet. Please mark yourselves present. Thank you. Now, do you all have copies of the book? You don't have anything? We just gave a very general introduction to the subject of Brahma Samhita and went over the basic structure of the overview and just trying to make it clear how important Brahma Samhita is. So today we are now going to go on and go into the first section, section A, texts 1 to 6. And specifically text 1, actually, today we'll discuss. It's the preamble or Pariba Sutra. We mentioned that yesterday. First of all, I think what I'll do is just read Jiva Goswami's definition of what is a Pariba Sutra. We mentioned it already, but just, he puts it very nicely. And we may distribute this in time. If you'd like copies of this. So in Krishna Sandarbha, Jiva Goswami is establishing that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And on the basis of Srimad Bhagavatam. And he begins by going to great lengths. He really goes into great detail to establish that Srimad Bhagavatam has a Pariba Sutra, or a definitive verse, which is, in a nutshell, expressing what the book's about. And that we mentioned yesterday is 1.3.28, Ete Changsa Kala Pumsa. Krishna Stu Bhagavan Swayam. That there are many incarnations, there are many expansions of the Lord, and there are also expansions of expansions, but out of all of them, Krishna Stu Bhagavan Swayam, Krishna is the original form. So that is the Paribhas Sutra of Srimad Bhagavatam 1.3.28. Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And on the basis of Srimad Bhagavatam, and he begins by going to great lengths. He really goes into great detail to establish that Srimad Bhagavatam has a Paribhas Sutra, or a definitive verse, which is, in a nutshell, expressing what the book's about. And that we mentioned yesterday is 1.3.28, Ete Changsa Kala Pumsa. Krishna Stu Bhagavan Swayam. That there are many incarnations, there are many expansions of the Lord, and there are also expansions of expansions, but out of all of them, Krishna Stu Bhagavan Swayam, Krishna is the original form. So that is the Paribhas Sutra of Srimad Bhagavatam 1.3.28. Okay. We are very enthusiastic fans. Thank you. Okay, well, I don't know what we'll do about that, but thank you. Okay, well, I don't know what we'll do about that, but put the cartel on top. Yeah. So, yeah, in Krishna Sandarbha, Jiva Goswami does this, and first of all, he explains what a Paribhas Sutra is, so that's what we're going to read right now. What he has written in Krishna Sandarbha to explain what is a Paribhas Sutra. So he says that it is a definition of terms or a system of abbreviations placed in the beginning of a book which must be understood in order to properly understand the remainder of the book. A Paribhas Sutra explains the proper method for understanding a book. It gives the key by which one may understand the actual purport of a series of apparently unrelated facts and arguments. The Paribhas Sutra is only stated once in a book and is not repeated. A single Paribhas Sutra may govern the contents even of a very large book with millions of statements or arguments. So that, in essence, is what a Paribhas Sutra is. And for our test, the end of next week, we will expect you to know what is a Paribhas Sutra. Okay. And in the meantime, if you would like, we can get what I've just read out now photocopied so you can have it there. I think he puts it very nicely. So Paribhas Sutra is something very important, highly definitive. And as we mentioned yesterday, one of the important, it doesn't really arise in the case of Brahma Samhita, but it really arises a lot in Srimad Bhagavatam. And that is that if you come across some statements and you may not be quite clear what to make of them, perhaps they could be interpreted one way or another way, or even in a number of ways. Thank you. Did everyone mark themselves present? You two didn't, can you? please. Your names are there. The Srimad Bhagavatam, you get a number of statements which, you know, it's so profound, and as we mentioned yesterday, he's putting a lot of information into a small space. So, you know, it's not really a matter of being able to read between the lines, but you really have to know the intent. Otherwise, it wouldn't be hard to get lost. Thank you. Wouldn't be hard to get lost in Srimad Bhagavatam. And the Mayavadis, of course, Shankaracharya never commented on Srimad Bhagavatam, and we understand that that was out of respect for it, because he's actually a Vaishnav, even though he's acting as the leading Mayavadi. But out of respect, he didn't comment on Srimad Bhagavatam, but some of his followers did, and you can just imagine what they came up with. Just all sorts of impersonal ideas. However, if you understand what is the Paribhas Sutra, what is that definitive verse which is establishing the key for understanding the whole work, the whole book, then when you come across these things which may be doubtful, you just compare them to or see how they apply in the context of that Paribhas Sutra, and then you'll get the right idea. So in this way we understand that Srimad Bhagavatam, every verse is describing Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Even if some verses appear to be describing the impersonal Brahman, but they're describing the impersonal Brahman as a manifestation, partial manifestation of Krishna. So here in our Brahma Samhita, this first verse then is the Paribhas Sutra. And we will now read it. You can repeat after me. Ishvara Parama Krishna, Satchidananda Vigraha, Anadir Adir Govinda, Sarvakarana Karanam. Krishna, who is known as Govinda, is the Supreme Godhead. He has an eternal, blissful, spiritual body. He is the origin of all. He has no other origin. And he is the prime cause of all causes. How many of you did actually read through the verse and purport? Oh, well done. Thank you. How many of you found it no problem to understand the language in the purport? How many of you found it just fine? Oh, good, we have a scholar here. Good. Very good. Well, yeah, I found it wasn't too much trouble as long as I kept my dictionary close at hand. So what I intend to do now is just read through the purport. In many cases, as we go through Brahma Samhita, we won't really do that. But in this case, because it is this particularly important and definitive verse, we'll do it. And as we go, we will attempt to explain any terminologies or concepts which may perhaps not be so clear. Is that okay? And in doing so, anyway, well, let's just see how it goes, but I think we'll be able to draw out some interesting ideas. And the more I've been doing this, I was just doing it already today for a while, the more I was appreciating the expertise of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. Just an interesting point, actually perhaps not many of you may be aware of this, but there is a sort of, I wouldn't say controversy, or anyway, there's in some people's minds a lack of clarity about who actually wrote the purports to these verses. There's a version of Brahma Samhita available in town in different shops, which has purports by Bhaktivinoda Thakur, which appear to be simplified versions of these purports, and some people think that these purports are the more complicated versions of those simplified purports. In other words, that these purports were written by Bhaktivinoda Thakur. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur actually did write a commentary on Brahma Samhita. In fact, I'm bringing this up because someone asked me about it after the class yesterday. So, not in this version. We have the Indian printing here. But if you happen to have one of the older American printings of Brahma Samhita, you'll see there's an extensive introduction written by Shubhananda. He wrote it many years ago. And there he makes the point that Srila Bhaktisiddhanta's commentary is following very closely to Bhaktivinoda Thakur's commentary. Very, very closely indeed. And he also makes the point that Srila Prabhupada, when he instructed the BBT devotees to try and present Brahma Samhita as we have it, Prabhupada told the editors to basically not to edit it, just to correct any spelling mistakes, basically. Because Srila Prabhupada said that if you try and get too much into the language, you know, these difficult words and so on, if you try and get too much into it and then simplify it too far, you may lose some of the essential meaning. Yeah. So this other version, which is available in the marketplace, which I haven't seen, but I've definitely been told of by a number of people, you know, at the very least that is there. Through attempting to simplify, which, I mean, you know, obviously some people would think that that might be a good idea, but through attempting to do that, the tendency is to lose meaning. Yeah. And then whether it's Bhaktivinoda Thakur or Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, Shubhananda says there that Srila Prabhupada personally made the point that Bhaktisiddhanta's commentary is very close to Bhaktivinoda Thakur's commentary. Yeah. So now, we're not exactly going to try and simplify. We're just going to try to explain some of these terminologies here. All right, so let us read through the purport then. Krishna is the exalted supreme entity, having his eternal name, eternal form, eternal attribution, and eternal pastimes. I think that's fairly clear. His name, form, qualities, attribution here, is referring to his qualities and his eternal pastimes. The very name Krishna implies his love-attracting designation, expressing by his eternal nomenclature the acme of entity. That is slightly more difficult. Now you'll see we've written on the board here something that we want you all to write down. This is the explanation given by Jiva Goswami in his commentary on this first verse, where he really analyzes each word at some length. And Srila Bhaktisiddhanta's and Bhaktivinoda's commentaries, they are like with reference at least to Jiva Goswami's commentary. So I just thought it'd be interesting for you to note that these comments here that Jiva Goswami has given us, because it's explaining how, you can see how Srila Bhaktisiddhanta has arrived at this brief explanation of what this name Krishna means. Now, if you look, you'll see by each syllable, there are two translations of that syllable. One is number one, one is number two. So number one, Jiva Goswami says, these are the primary meanings. And number two, these are the secondary meanings. And when you put the primary meanings and secondary meanings together, then like the sort of comprehensive translation of this name, Krishna, is what we've written here.